You're listening to 1001 Album Club, where each episode we discuss a different album from Robert Emery's book, 1001 Albums Was Here Before You Die. This episode we're talking about Ice Cube, America's Most Wanted. In the room I have Rob.
What's up?
And on the line I have Ben.
Fuck you, Ice Cube.
And Kyle.
Don't try to apprehend him.
America's Most Wanted is the debut studio album by American rapper Ice Cube, released on May 16th, 1990 by Priority Records. The producer was The Bomb Squad, The Lynch Mob, and the genre is rap and gangster rap. I'm going to read from AllMusic Review, David Jeffries. When Ice Cube split from N.W.A. after the group's seminal Straight Outta Compton album Change the World Forever, expectations were high, too high to ever be met by anyone but the most talented of artists. And at his most inspired at that time, Cube was just that. With America's Most Wanted, the rapper expanded upon Compton, making a more full-bodied album that helped boost the role of the individual in hip-hop. Save the dramatic intro where a mythical Ice Cube is fried in the electric chair. His debut is filled with eye-level views of inner city that is always vivid, generally frightening, generally personal, and sometimes humorous in the gallows style. All right, what do we think of Ice Cube, America's Most Wanted?
It's real good.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's a real good album.
You know, my hot take was I almost think the backing tracks or the production by the Bomb Squad, the Lynch Mob, overshadows his rapping.
Yeah, when I was reading about how they put it together, it seems like they just kind of took some stuff and chopped it up and made it really cool.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think his flow's pretty good, mostly on particular songs. But I definitely see what you're saying. The production's amazing. And the beats are really original and there's a lot of stuff going on with a lot of it.
Yeah, I have a little bit of a backstory for that. So when Ice Cube was creating this album, he was going to go meet with Sam Sever, but Sever ditched the meeting with Cube, leaving him waiting in Def Jam's office. But fatefully, the rapper bumped into Public Enemy frontman Chuck D, who was at that time recording a track called Burn Hollywood Burn for Fear of a Black Planet with Big Daddy Kane. And so Chuck D was like, hey, why don't you come down? Like, you can hang out. You can be on the track. We'll just talk about things. So he's like, of course, yes, I will be there. You know, Public Enemy at this time was bigger than life. Mm-hmm. And so he goes there. Chuck then agrees to produce the first album, Ice Cube's first album. So he says, all right, we're going to do this. We got the Bomb Squad, who had pioneered dense layered sound for Public Enemy, obviously. So Chuck agrees to produce the album. And so he's like, all right, come with us, Ice Cube. They take Ice Cube to Long Island. They drive him out to Long Island. And it's at 710 Franklin. They just drop him in a warehouse. And they're like, here you go. And they shove him into this warehouse. And they're like, here's your records. And it's just stacks and stacks and stacks and stacks of records. It's not a recording studio. He thought he was going to a recording studio to demo tracks. So you drop him off. They're like,
Pick your songs.
Pick your songs. Him, Eric Sadler, put the records that you want in these two crates. Here's two crates. Write down the sample information. And they just let him do that for days.
Just kid in a candy store.
Just days and days of Ice Cube just like going through and like looking at something, be like, all right, that looks funky. All right, stick that in the thing. Let's listen to it. And he said he had a good time.
I want to do that. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
He said they stopped for a minute because he remembered watching the fight of Tyson versus Buster Douglas in Tokyo, Japan, where Tyson obviously, you know, the first time he loses, and they were going crazy. People stopped by the warehouse, Redman, Busta Rhymes, but 10 days go by. He's been doing this for 10 days, and he's like, man, I don't know if I can, like, you know, Chuck keeps stepping by and, like, giving him the thumbs up, but no one's, like, telling him what's going on. They're just kind of like, yeah, yeah, just do this. He's thinking, all right, well, maybe, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. Finally, after 10 days, Eric Sadler had beats. They take him to Green Street in Manhattan. Now we're going to make your album. Like, now you'll see what happens. And then that's it. Bomb Squad and Sir Jinx started, you know, making all the stuff. And that was it. But he thinks that it was a, you know, a test to see how dedicated he would be. To say, are you dedicated to actually do this? You know, and he said he learned tons from that. You know, it wasn't just Dr. Dre bringing him a sample, mm-hmm. a track, and saying, all right, here's the track I got for you guys to rap over. He actually had to think about the samples that were going into his album and how he wanted to be represented with the music at the time.
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
That's interesting. Cool. Yeah. Because he definitely showed up with like a bag full of just notebooks of just. Mm-hmm. Tons of stuff he had written. So that collaborative process is really neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what is he, 20?
Yeah.
Maybe the 19 just like fell off him. Yeah. Cause I mean, when we were covering the NWA record, he got the fucking work getting this thing out. Like there was like 3 months of touring with NWA and he was like, nah, I'm out.
Yeah. And he also did, you know, a lot of the, what would you say, ghostwriting or, you know, writing for other people to rap.
Oh, he did all of it, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some songs that ended up on this album were stuff that he had like written with Easy in mind.
Yeah.
To perform it. Yeah.
The You Love to Hate song was definitely an NWA song.
Yeah. Mm,
yeah.
I was going to say, I really liked Love to Hate because it was really interesting that he was saying, I'm the enemy. Fine. I'm the enemy. Like, he was wondering if he should have people say, fuck you, Ice Cube. And he was like, no, let's do it. You know, like.
Yeah. The other people in the studio were like, are you sure about this? Do you hear what you're saying?
I am whatever you say I am. And if I wasn't, then why would I say I am?
I do. I'm sorry. I do have a note here. I want to back it up. Sorry, Birch, when you were talking about just him being locked in that warehouse full of records. That makes it really funny that he found like an Andrew Dice Clay sample.
Hey, this looks funky.
I squeeze this on there.
he felt ostracized, you know, by being in a place where he thought it was making it was all, you know, glamorous, you know, oh, Public Enemy is gonna help me out here, and it was like homework. Get to work.
Yeah,
but so by far work, from home. By work you mean listen to as many records as you want.
Yeah. Yep.
Just crate digging. I, you know me, I like digging through garbage.
I like digging through
having
crates.
A warehouse full of garbage to dig through. Come on, come on. Yeah. Initially he was really wanting Dr. Dre to do this record.
Yeah.
And Easy was not having it.
Yeah. Which is disappointing, but at the same time,
no, we wouldn't have gotten this. And this is way different than what Dr. Dre has ever done.
Absolutely.
Yeah. This is important stuff.
This is the closest you're going to see to, you know, the sort of, yeah, Public Enemy, you know, backing Ice Cube.
Mm-hmm.
That sort
so was the Chronic, favorite. What was it, like 91, 92?
92.
It was pretty quick pretty quickly after this.
Yeah, we're going to get it soon.
Yeah, I think it was 92.
Just because that's what Turn Off the Radio was about. You know, this wasn't on the radio. None of this really broke big until fucking MTV.
Most of this album you cannot play on the radio.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Probably none of the songs.
No.
I mean, would have to heavily edit a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there are no stations for this, you know? I mean, it was all just...
True.
You know, any R&B or dance, you know, there wasn't gangster rap.
Right.
Everybody was afraid of it.
Yeah, this was the enemy. Yeah. Yeah, this was the shocking new thing.
And, I mean, like, literally zero promotion by anybody. There was no singles to be really had. And within 2 weeks of its release, 500,000 copies sold. Jeez. And fucking like certified platinum in 4 months.
Yeah.
It, the NWA had it tilted the scales. Like this is what's happening now.
Yep.
The early 1990s.
Fucking cool, man. Real, real
God.
Cool.
You had mentioned Turn Off the Radio. I thought that song was amazing. Maybe the best song on the album. And followed by Endangered Species, Tales from the Dark Side. Mm-hmm. Also, so good.
Yeah.
Those two songs
are song after song. Yeah.
Right in the middle. And I thought those were highlights for the album. I couldn't.
Yeah, I agree. But he also, like, in interviews and retrospectives, like, he talked about the NWA record being kind of a shock record. And this was, like, his next evolution, you know, showing what he could actually do. And I really enjoyed that song he did with Yo-Yo.
Yeah.
The Man's World song. That's pretty cool of him, you know.
I thought that was a good, since there's so much, like, what would you say?
Overt misogyny.
Derogatory statements towards women. I thought it was good to have, she's part of the lynch mob, and I thought it was good. Like, that was a needed counter, like, balance.
It gives Absolutely. What he's saying more of a playful feel than him just being a fucking, like, rampant misogynist.
Yeah, yeah.
So I like that a lot, too. I also
like Andrew Dice Clay.
Just like Andrew Dice Clay. I also really liked I'm Only Out for One Thing, that Flavor Flav verse where he fucks up and just starts cracking up.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. It's pretty.
I wonder if everybody listening knows that Flavor Flav had a show where women competed to make out with them.
Flavor of Love, was it?
It was the Flavor of Love.
Okay.
Flavor of Love.
Yeah.
Multiple and what seasons. Was the spinoff?
I Love New York.
Yes.
Okay. No, that was the
spinoff. Yeah, New York. She was a competitor on Flavor of Love. There's Rock of Love, Daisy of Love, Shot of Love of Tila Tequila.
Wow.
Didn't Flavor Flav meet and date Brigitte Nielsen through one of those shows?
Yes. Through
Surreal Life.
Surreal Life, yeah.
Surreal Life.
Yeah.
Season two. Season one or two.
All right, back to the album.
Wait, I want to talk about Vern Troyer for
5 minutes. I did think it was interesting too. Hank Shockley from the Bomb Squad, he said sometimes they would, you know, when he was working with artists, he was working with like Ice Cube, and sometimes at the end of the day, if you don't do well enough on the track, they'll take it back. They won't just give people tracks. Like, they're so particular that they will preview a track for you.
Not for you.
And if you don't do well enough on the track, they'll be like, no, we're saving this for someone else. That's some clout that they can just, you know, take that back from an artist.
It's kind of bananas. On America's Most Wanted, the song, I'm assuming that either the Bomb Squad or Ice Cube were like knew that the Turtles like had already sued.
Yeah.
And so the use of I'm Chief Kamanawana Leah, were the Royal Macadamia Nuts. The Turtles cleared the sample because they asked, I guess.
Yeah, I think that was it.
You just have to ask.
You have to clear it.
You have to ask Flo and Eddie.
What do you guys think of the skits? Because that was a big deal for this album.
It was kind of a big deal, but they kind of scaled it back a little bit. It seemed like they were trying to make like a story out of them.
They did.
And then they realized how much work it was, and then they kind of scaled it back.
Yeah, Sir Jinx, actually, it was a lot of his doing, and he kind of showed how to make a more interesting movie setting of a skit. So before this, and Ice Cube said he was definitely inspired by De La Soul, Beastie Boys, you know, everything that was going on at the time, but particularly 3 Feet High and Rising, mm-hmm. Doing those skits. But he wanted it to seem like you're in a scene, like really in that fully immersive scene, so that, you know, you're hearing people walk from the left channel to the right channel. you're hearing, you know, gunfire in the distance or something like that. And so all those skits like had the mic placement and setup so that it would seem like a real scene.
Oh, like Roger Waters and Q Sound.
Yep.
Yes, just like Roger Waters and Q Sound. And I hope you continue bringing it up every time you can.
Turn up the volume in the first 10 seconds. And if it sounds like the dog is two houses over, then you're good to go.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Set the controls for the heart of the sun.
I think when we were talking about De La Soul, Jeremy piped in and was like, you know, skits are kind of the worst parts of a lot of these albums, with the exception of I think De La Soul did fine. I think Wu-Tang did really, really good. And these skits aren't bad.
They're fine.
Yeah, they're fine. Unnecessary, but totally fine.
Yeah, there's not like too many of them where, you know.
Yeah, I think that's what happened with De La Soul, where it was, you know, it was like every other song.
Win all the money.
Yeah, they were very good, though. I did find them.
Really, they were funny.
Very funny. Yeah. But yeah, I did. I mean, I did think Better Off Dead. The first track is pretty. I mean, first skit is pretty great.
Yeah, hell yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
If you want to set the scene, you want to, you know, paint the picture.
Yeah. Takes a minute to do it. Not a big deal.
Exactly.
And I'm sure it sounded great in car stereos back then.
Yeah. Yeah. We're listening to Endangered Species right now.
Yeah.
Putting the headphones on, you get that high pitched tinnitus sound.
Yep. I was worried that something's wrong for a second.
I thought so too.
Same.
I was like, oh my God, am I William Shatner now?
Yeah. It's like when you hear a loud pop or something and you get that little ring in your ear. I mean, it's right after the gunshots. Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. And also, you know,
it actually starts earlier than that.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah.
In the track. And of course, Chuck D, you know, just killing it.
Absolutely.
Like you do. Now, what do y'all want to pay the twin? I'm turning your back pocket skinny. Oh, yeah. I'm shaking the ivory. And boom, it's like they die for me. Fool, you can get loud, get mad, hit the joint, but don't forget my point.
I do the one, I guess, complaint I have about this album is I do feel like it kind of, what would you say, loses steam, a little repetitive, has some of the same themes over and over.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Ben had it right. Like, you know, a lot of these were his scribbles from like N.W.A.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, this is a continuation of that thing. And luckily, we're going to be getting The Predator, I think.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. Honestly, like Ice Cube's whole catalog through the 90s is pretty fucking incredible. But yeah, like he continually gets better. This is better than what he did with N.W.A. and so on and so forth. And, you know, he's fucking 18, 19, 20, and then continuing on. Like, you know, he's just grown as an artist.
Yeah. Some people were not so fond of this record, including Rolling Stone, who originally gave the album 2.5 out of 5 stars. Alan White commenting, the relentless profanity grows wearisome. The Bomb Squad beats lose steam, and Cube's attitudes towards women are simply despicable. Mm-hmm. He also declared the album as a disappointment.
And then when he wrote the inside of that same record, like with the extended edition, he bumped it up to 4.5 stars and gushed about the production and Ice Cube's fucking lyricism. So it's just for everything.
You said that was Rolling Stone?
No, it was Rolling Stone. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to bother.
So it was like when they did that Weezer Mea Culpa for Pinkerton.
Yeah, I'm not going to bother reading the Kreisgau review. He gave it a B-, but he had a, I don't know. I feel as if I were to read this, that it might be considered like hate speech. So.
Oh, no.
David Mills from the Washington Post, though, he said Ice Cube has now proven that he was N.W.A.'s crucial element. He's unusually gifted rhymer, and his delivery is even more self-assured.
Absolutely.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I think if there's one thing to learn is he lives up to the hype of coming off N.W.A. and having no, I mean, there's not a single person who is on that record that is on this record, I believe.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
He is a...
That's so ballsy.
Out in the woods.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah. But luckily, he does have a fantastic team.
Yeah. I mean, just kind of fell into the Bomb Squad's lap. That's not so bad. Doing all right. All right, Dice Man.
Most amazing fun fact that I learned about this album, America's Most Wanted initially charted without the support of lead single or video, although the title track would later receive a pressing and a rare video for Who's the Mac eventually surfaced. The director was Alex Winter.
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah.
Bill. Wait,
Bill?
From Bill and Ted, yes. Was the Bill director.
Bill S. Preston Esquire?
Yes.
Which is cool. Yeah, and from here, he went and decided to start acting in movies and did Boys in the Hood.
Yep.
How long until Daddy Daycare?
How long until Are We There Yet?
I don't know when any of those movies came out. Yeah. But Ice Cube's star is still rising. Sheila... Like, Ice Cube's one of her favorite favorite rappers ever, and she entered into an MTV Meet Ice Cube thing. She was like 12 or something. Yeah. And got a response from MTV, and they asked her how old she was, and they're like, yeah, this isn't gonna work.
Aww. Oh, that's too bad. She get him at Ice
Cube? So she put on a wig or something and
yeah,
some old people clothes, right?
Her and her sister sat on each other's shoulders, got a big trench coat.
Just looking like E.T. with a little hat on.
Yeah. Hello, young man.
What do you think?
Man, I think it's terrific. I'm completely positive on it. It's cool to see the progression, and mm-hmm. it's also insane how well this sold, like, and how important it is, like, to rap going from this point in time into the future. Like, it was highly influential, and yeah, the fucking beats rule, and
yeah,
big important really record. I think it holds up in most respects.
This album didn't grab me that much.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a bad album at all. I think that I think that's not for me. I think that I would rather hang out with Shock G than Ice Cube, maybe. I don't know. The misogynistic lyrics weird me out still. I think that maybe I'm not that into gangster rap.
Fair.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. I kind of had a similar vibe where I was trying to think, would I put this on again? You know, that's sometimes what I think about, if positive, neutral, just in our personal tastes. And I was kind of like, I don't know if I'd put this on. Maybe a couple songs, but not the whole thing. I don't know if I'll ever like revisit this.
I'm gonna retort to Ben really quick.
Yeah.
Crumb Kits Volume 2.
Yes. Ooh.
Its entirety, front to back. Hard. You will dance your buns off and you will sing along to it. To mm-hmm. the parts you're allowed to sing along to. And I think your problem isn't with the misogynistic lyrics. I think it might be with the delivery system of it. If it was a more upbeat pop sort of thing, like this is just a, this doesn't have the dancey vibe to it. And Ice Cube is also on Crumb Kits Volume 2.
I've only ever listened to Crumb Kits Volume 2 drunk at a house party. And I've only ever listened to America's Most Wanted sober with headphones on reading my computer.
Okay.
You gotta, yeah.
It could be, there may be a time and a place for this that isn't that.
I think I just, by the time we get to, let's see, by the time I get to I'm Only Out for One Thing, I feel like I've heard this song. Like it's, you know, the production's still there. It's still lively, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, all right, how many more songs do I have album?
I'm not going to say there's not a slight lull in it, but I mean, like, directly from, you know, we've got Rolling with the Lynch Knob, we've got Who's the Mac, and it's A Man's World. Like, there's good, like, Who's the Mac is a fucking incredible song.
It's a fantastic song.
Yeah,
Okay. it picks up, like, it's what, how long is this record? 60 minutes?
Yeah.
Would I have preferred 35? Yes, of course. I am 1,000 years old and, you know.
Yeah. I'm going to agree with Rob, though. I feel like it's not like front loaded or anything. I feel like there's a lot of good stuff that comes on later. And the last track, I think is probably the best example of his flow. I think that's the best he flows on the whole.
It's true. Yeah, yeah. No, you're right.
I don't know. I like it. I hope everyone else does too.
Yeah, I just.
Well, I like it too, Rob.
Yeah, I think I just don't. I'm just gonna go neutral because okay. I just think it's just not hitting for me right now. I mean, it doesn't hit for me the way that the Public Enemy, and that could be because I've.
It Takes the Nation to Millions
That's immaculate album. It is. And it's very hard to. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out like what exactly about it. I don't think it's this flow. I think it's just the beats are good though. That's the thing
they are great. I don't know. Let's pick this up in 1993 Predator. With the Predator.
Yeah, yeah.
Good.
I think my Ninja Turtle lamp just burned out.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Come on, buddy.
All right, next time we'll be talking about Jane's Addiction, Rule de lo Habitual.
To make some money, why not? Down on Sesame Street, the dope spot. There he saw the lady who lived in a shoe. So dope out the front by the back marijuana group. For the man that was really important, who lived down the street in an Air Jordan. Ride to the fella, Mr. Roger the Hose. Drove a 500 sitting on the Lorenzo's. He broke out, little old Pete smoked out. Saw her and her friend selling sheepskin. Yo, yo, got them sheepskins. Yo, money at the sheepskins. Yo, baby, what's up with that? Hickory, dickory, dock. It was 12 o'clock. Cinderella ain't home. Must be giving up the cock. I don't doubt it. She is kind of freaky, of course. Had a fight with Snow White. She was fucking her dwarf. Saw a fight over colors, too. Red Riding Hood and little boy Blue. A bad influence, yo, I don't know. But Ice Cube would tell the kids how the story